Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT. This Week in Tech, episode 156 for August 18th, 2008. Get off of my cloud. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. And by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them. Because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. This is TWiT, episode 156, in studio with us all the way from the UK. I liked his accent so much, I bought the country. Mr. Will Harris from channelflip.com.
Hello.
We love Will Harris.
How's it going, guys? It's lovely to be here in sunny Petaluma.
Can you hear Will, or are you just being aloof?
No, we can hear him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What do you want us to do? Jump in?
We're waiting for the second half of that joke. You know, Petaluma.
Sunny Petaluma, there is no second half to that joke. That is Patrick Norton of Techzilla fame, techzilla.com. We missed you at New Media Expo, Pat. Everybody, your co-host was down there. Jim Lauterbach was there. Prager, even. Sarah Lane. It was fun.
Yeah, so I've been told. Thanks. Rub it in some more.
Did you? Well, you have a baby. Was that why you didn't go, or were there other reasons?
No, it's just I wasn't invited on any panels, and I didn't have a panel to give, and I'm not management, and there are other people who had good reasons to go. So I stayed home and did the kid thing.
Oh, man, I would have loved to have you on TWiT Live and everything. Oh, I'm sorry.
Feel free to invite me next time.
I will.
Not that I'm bitter.
No, I will. I mean, I just figured everybody would be there.
It's
all right.
No,
Rose wasn't there either.
I haven't been there in like 3 years. So.
Patrick, did you turn to your guns and your religion?
He's bitter. He's bitter. If he lived in a small town, he would have.
No.
Also here. Go ahead, Chucky.
I was going to say, I like the way the British like to chime in on our politics.
You know, one of my favorite conversations with a British expatriate who was going off on the Second Amendment as being the worst aspect of America and talking about how no one was killed with guns in Britain. And I looked him dead in the eye and smiled and said, yes, your soccer hooligans kill people with, you know, rocks in the ends of their socks. Kick the living snot out of people with their boots until they're dead.
Patrick, our soccer hooligans kill people with their breath.
Exactly.
The breath is enough to do it.
What, Nino? Guns, I've got my breath.
I was looking at him. I'm like, yeah. Second Amendment, killing people, blah, blah, blah. Guns, guts, glory. I'm like, look, man, there's a reason they put the Second Amendment next to the First Amendment. It's because the American government can't be trusted. I mean, we were founded. I mean, look at the Revolution, man. What a politically complicated thing to look at. I mean, it's basically a bunch of entitled older gentlemen that were pissed off about paying taxes for the services they'd received from their government.
Sounds like Dvorak.org/blog.
So, well, the other thing is, you know, this is also not a small, you know, a small island where people are crammed in. We have a lot of wide open spaces where you're probably better off carrying some heat.
You never know when a Wolverine's going to try to rip your face off.
Well, or some sort of a weirdo.
Hey, did anybody go to the...
Yeah, we may introduce me before we go on.
John C. Dvorak, ladies and gentlemen.
Needs no introduction.
The man that needs no introduction, but wants one anyway.
That's right.
Did anybody go to the Bigfoot press conference down in Palo Alto last Friday? The guys, you know, this guy's caught a Bigfoot.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Turns out it's a possum in a gorilla suit, which is kind of an odd combination.
Oh.
They wouldn't even bring it with them.
Possum in a gorilla suit?
They said the DNA to an some guy. He sent an email back and said, "This is possum DNA." And they said, "Well, see that proves it. It must be Bigfoot."
They said they thought the Bigfoot maybe ate a possum.
That was their way around it.
I ate a possum.
The funny thing is, this guy wasn't even like a real expert. This guy was just some guy they found in the email. And he still, you know, still didn't cooperate. No, you're supposed to say it's Bigfoot. It's a possum. You're supposed to say it's Bigfoot.
So do we have any tech news this week?
I don't know. I like that story. I thought that was a good story. There's lots of... Are you kidding? Will Harris has been going wild with the tech news. New BlackBerry coming out, 900. The Bold, you excited?
Yeah. Next.
I like how John likes to keep us moving along.
I like this one. Here's a story. Gasset says Apple played chicken with Mobile Me launch. I haven't seen this story before. Tell us about it.
They
didn't play chicken. They ran it right off the cliff, man.
Jean-Louis Gasset was a former Apple president who was kind of forced out some years ago. Remember, he wrote subsidized BOS. He was a Scully, man.
But he's not bitter.
He says a long blog post in which he says the machismo that leads to playing chicken with launches is what screwed up the Mobile Me launch. He said he says it in French, by the way. No one had enough brains and guts to risk humiliation and raise a hand and say, Chief, everybody calls Steve Jobs Chief, apparently. Chief, we are not ready here. Let's stop everything. As a result, the Mobile Me badly crashed on launch.
Yeah, but that doesn't, I mean, that kind of stuff.
I love it.
It's like,
hey, Chief. So, I guess what he's saying is that, but you know, he understands the Apple culture. He's saying that people were, you know, as always with every Silicon Valley launch, going right up to the wire. And you go up to the wire, you got the launch, and somebody should have stepped forward and say it's not ready. But, you know, with the Steve Jobs running the show,
Do you want to say no to Steve Jobs? Do you want to be the guy that steps in and says, Steve, you know how we were planning on doing this thing? We can't
do
it.
Only if my options are vested.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty, I mean, that's, and, you know, this is the problem with a little bit with the corporate culture at Apple, is that you can't say no to anybody. But don't you think Steve fired people anyway? I know he did. The guy who ran Mobile Me was ousted.
He was?
Well, I think, you know, he was moved upstairs or something. They brought in a new guy to run Mobile Me.
Reshuffled. Yeah.
Reorged into oblivion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fairly self-evident to say that they played chicken with launch. They tried to get it done for the launch like you would do with any product. They failed and just decided to punt it out anyway and hope it would work.
It works now, though.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, you know, they decided they didn't have a public beta. They didn't have an open beta. They didn't do a lot of what most companies would consider due diligence with, you know, straining the servers pre-launch. You know, and are you sure it's fixed? I thought they promised to have it fixed sometime between now and Christmas.
Well, the mail...
That was the email I read.
Christmas of what year?
It's working for me.
Works for me.
It's a cloud.
It's a cloud. The cloud is... We don't know if the cloud works or not.
The cloud is a bad idea.
So me.com... How many people want a me.com email address?
Chirp, chirp.
Is that a... You know. Apparently, chirp. According to... A story in the IDG news service in Computer World. If you happen to be, for instance, iamthegreatest@gmail.com, according to the University of Leipzig, some professors there, you will actually, you know, people will assume you are a narcissist. He says people really judge you based on the email address you choose. So if you're at AOL.com, they go, newbie.
Or old dud.
Old dud newbie.
What does it say about you if you have an entire domain name named after yourself?
Narcissist.
So you got in early.
WillHarris.com, do you have that?
I have .co.uk.
Actually, he has Will Harris is so damn hot, he's too goddamn hot for Britain.com.
In a paper in the Journal of Research and Personality, the scientists took a look at under 600 email addresses, just under, and had people who created them fill out a brief personality questionnaire. Then they asked 100 students to rate the same addresses to find out if the email names seemed to be neurotic, open, agreeable, conscientious, narcissistic, or extroverted. If somebody were, say, leo@leoville.com.
Wait, so they had they didn't have the test group do it. They didn't have a large group do it. They didn't have a diverse group do it. Students decided whether or not...
What they were trying to see is
we picked 100 very, very mature college students to make decisions about. I mean,
students are like normal people. I mean, the sense that
no,
not true.
Have a student in your house, John?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And as do I. They tend to judge people based on their addresses. For example, people who used words like little, sweet or baby, combined with cute animal names like Mousy or Bunny. Little baby bunny at AOL.com. What would you say? What would you say? Neurotic, open, agreeable, conscientious, narcissistic, or extroverted? Pick one.
Exploitable.
How about idiot?
It's idiot. It's not on the list. They say agreeable and neurotic. On the other hand, words like king or the best were linked to narcissism. Even more interesting, these judgments tended to be right in 5 of the 6 personality characters they measured. In other words, they gave these people then MMPIs or some sort of inventory, and they said, yeah, they are narcissists. Openness is the easiest thing to gauge. Students would miss the mark on extroversion.
So your next boss is not a good name, I take it.
And I think me.com.
That's funny. That's Sumner Redstone's name. It's weird.
Really? Is that his email address? Yournextboss@me.com? That would be pretty good.
Your next boss.
I often wonder, though, you know, you see, you know, AOL, for instance. Can you be a business-like person if your email address is at AOL.com?
I've seen, actually, like a lot of eBay-type shops and non-particularly tech-centric places that still use AOL addresses. And they're always, you know, kind of, you know, so it is. You look at it and you're like, huh? And they're like, oh, well, this is a guy who, you know, builds machine parts. He doesn't really care about having a serious address.
John McCain at webtv.com. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Tells you
is that right?
A bunch of email.
Somebody's fake. That's a fake.
Talking about...
I love the fact that you actually entertained that as being possible, John.
Well, you know, I don't think I'm unreasonable in that regard.
He says he doesn't use a computer. No, he has people to do that for him.
You know, how many people actually bought WebTV the second time around?
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know.
I think it's kind of scary that... Nah, I'm not going to get into politics again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, let's hear from the Great Britons about our politics. Will. Hey, I just ran into something on the web that was showing posters and bumper stickers in England that's saying UK for Obama with that Obama logo and the whole thing. I'm thinking, what is wrong with these people?
Yeah.
They're bored.
Just on the subject of Apple and jobs, did you see that Apple is now worth more than Google?
Wow!
In terms of net worth, 159 billion market cap, 157 billion market cap.
It's all paper, though. It's not.
Yeah, who cares?
Well,
it's two guys in funny coats in Wall Street arguing over the price of a stock. It's mythical. It's fake until you cash out. You know? It's not real money.
So doesn't it signify in some ways that the market thinks that Apple has better chances than Google, maybe? Something like that.
That's not the way it works.
It's not how it works.
Google's not chopped liver. Give me a break.
Wait, what's the market? What's Halliburton's value? That would be really funny.
Take a look at GM. It's about 1/10 of either of those guys.
Is that really?
Oh, isn't Facebook worth more on paper than like Ford?
Yeah, no,
I'm pretty sure that's true.
I think if you're going to do a leverage buyout, buy those guys.
That's what do they call that? The capitalization? What do they call that? What's that term?
Market cap?
Capitalization.
Yeah. It refers to the amount that the stock is worth on the open market at the closing price.
Based on the number of shares available times the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's
hold on 1 second. Yeah. Halliburton's like $38
billion. Wow.
Cheaper than Yahoo.
Yeah, so Google's market capitalization is like 4-point-something times Halliburton's.
You know, I would say, yeah, who cares? But we pay so much attention to stock price, which really isn't... I mean, isn't market cap more significant than stock price? Because stock price just doesn't say how many shares are outstanding. So at least this combines the number of shares outstanding.
Well, there's 876 million shares of Halliburton, and there's 314 million shares of Google.
Shouldn't you be talking about this with Horowitz last week?
Yeah, you didn't like that show so much, did you?
No, I didn't mind the show. I just didn't like the fact that twerp Jason Calacanis had to jump all over Eric's Craig's Finder and not knowing anything about it.
By the way, I think Craig's Finder is kind of back up with some sort of odd proxy setup or something. Did Eric get it back up?
Yeah, it's back up, and then they took some of the stuff down. So what Eric has decided to do is, and by the way, he did ask for permission to use the thing, which is what annoyed me about Calacanis, because he didn't, you know.
Well, he was speculating.
Yeah, well, that's all he does. So anyway, he's just basically going to release the code to the public domain. Anybody who wants to run this thing and run it off their own server.
There you go. Let a million flowers bloom and let Craig play whack-a-mole with that. I think Jason's friends with Craig Newmark and maybe felt a little defensive. But I think Jason, like the rest of the panel last week, said, that, you know, ultimately the reasons Craig and Jim gave for shutting it down were bogus. He said that.
Yeah, they're totally bogus.
He said it was to protect our community, but that's bogus.
There's other systems that are running under it. I've got a bunch of Twitterers that said, hey, what about this one and that one? There's about three or four other of these kinds of devices. And then meanwhile, why is Craig going around telling everybody to use Google? I thought he was like a community-oriented guy.
Yeah, that's an interesting response. Yeah, that doesn't make
sense.
Well,
he's trying to create a bunch of local communities, and it's just, it's, you know, it's
annoying. As opposed
to
one global Craigslist community. Each community is local.
Maybe that's what he considers the dividing line between Craigslist and eBay.
Yeah.
But that doesn't explain the Google thing, because if you go to and look up something on Google and you use site colon, Craigslist. Craigslist.org, it looks at all of them all over the world.
Right. I think that's what he does in lieu of, you know, throwing out chilling effects, cease and desist orders.
You know, use Google
diluting
instead.
Diluting his, yeah. Don't do something with Craig in the name, because eventually I'll have to sue you.
Hey, were you guys watching the Olympics on TV, or were you watching it on the net? Here's a bunch of savvy internet types.
I've been amazed at people whining about the television coverage and being completely ignorant. You can watch, like, for all of the sports that you know, except in the 70s on Wide World of Sports, where you'd see, like, you know, Olympic class, you know, marbles or something. You know what I mean? Like, remember Wide World of Sports when it was just, you know, it'd be like, you know, all these serious sports and then something completely bizarre.
Yeah. ESPN 8. El Ocho.
But I mean, I was watching, like, online, like, oh, you can watch, you know, 3.5 hours of, you know, wrestling eliminations by class.
Like, I like it because there's not much commentary. It's just the event. I kind of enjoy it online. 22 hours they're putting up online. But they were very concerned about it cannibalizing.
Yeah, the trouble was, though, they were concerned about it cannibalizing their TV coverage, but then were putting out Twitter messages spoiling the results.
Yeah.
So if you were following them,
you want to watch live.
If you're following them on Twitter, they were telling people the results before it was broadcast, and
that's annoying.
That's a bit annoying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, but it's also they've already had more viewers than the last Olympics. They've got more of the 18 to 34 demo watching. It's the coveted 18 to 34 demo. And everything says, you know, they sold ton of advertising. They've sold millions of dollars of advertising since the start of the Olympics. I mean, it sounds like they're rolling in money, and their numbers are really good.
Well, and that's what NBC learned. They were very concerned. In fact, you remember they didn't put the opening event online until after they broadcast it on TV, because they were afraid people would watch it online and then not watch TV. The research is out for the first week, and Alan Wurzel, NBC's president of research, says, quote, the internet hardly cannibalizes. It actually fuels interest. Half of the online users want to catch up with events they may have missed. Another 40% want to replay something they first saw on TV. 81 million people watched the men's swimming relay on television. Another 1.7 watched it later again on the web. The web is actually driving TV viewership and vice versa.
That's what we've always known happens. That's one of the effects of the web. People, we've been hounding people about this. But let me make a comment about it. I mean, I've been watching on both. I tend to watch. There's a lot of obscure events I might want to check out. Look at them online.
The wrestling, the judo, the kai. I mean, they've done this amazing. They've shot this beautiful video of, like, the K-1 and the canoeing competitions, the whitewater. And it's, like, incredible to see all of the eliminations on that.
90% of people who follow the Olympics watched it only on TV. The other 10% used every medium they could find. The internet, mobile phones, video on demand from cable. Only 0.2% use the internet exclusively.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention is that I think the Olympics are successful this year because there's a shortage of there's hardly any of these sappy, crummy features they did the last couple of years.
Up close and personal. Yeah.
Up close and personal garbage that nobody cares about. Yeah. About how someone had a club foot when they were 14 and now
they've been getting some of that in. They've just been very, very brief about it. But not, I agree. It hasn't been an overwhelming, like, you know, people need drama to care about the Olympics.
Yeah, I think that was always conventional wisdom, is that people won't care about these silly sports like field hockey unless there are star, you know, unless they know the people playing, unless there's
call,
a
Don't call field hockey silly.
Sarah whipped my butt, I know.
Whatever.
I think
the point is that they don't understand that the games themselves are dramatic. And the other thing is the only people that would feel that way are people that don't like sports, which is what I think were the people that came up with these idiotic ideas to do all these stupid, sappy features.
I agree.
I think the best
ones
to watch...
Is that like putting celebrities, mainstream celebrities, on a tech show because non-technical people will care, John?
Never heard of such a thing.
That's a crazy idea. Nobody be that foolish. Nuts. Insane. So in Britain, you've been watching the Olympics in Britain, Will Harris.
Yes.
Is it very different, the coverage on the Beeb?
Well,
it
it's much straighter and less glitzy. It's BBC, so it's quite down the line. But they've actually been broadcasting on the web simultaneously. So like the opening ceremony, for example, you could watch live on the BBC News website via Flash as it was on the TV.
Oh, neat.
By far the best thing that I've been watching is definitely the beach volleyball.
Well, everybody loves that.
Yeah, that's worth the price of admission.
When I was up in Canada, I was watching it off the CBC.
How were they doing?
I was up in Washington. I was up in we watch the CBC up there.
Right. What was that coverage like compared
to
ours?
I think, probably like the BBC's a little bit. It was a little. It was different people. They were less amenable to the Chinese. I mean, they weren't kissing the Chinese butts as much as the Americans.
That's been interesting too, hasn't it? They have not word one about the Chinese hosts. I mean, it's like
they're a little more objective.
Bob Costa actually called out President Bush on it when he interviewed President Bush. Before later on that day, President Bush was caught with the infamous, and I'm sure Will's been following this, the Misty May trainer. You like to, sir?
Is that where he slapped?
Butt slapping.
But he didn't slap her on the butt. He had the good sense to slap her higher up.
I think it was close.
No, I watched it in slow motion.
Too drunk to hit the target.
No. You know, I I'm not a Bush defender on this one. On most things, but on this one, I'm going to stand up and say, no win situation. First of all, he probably shouldn't have been there, but he was there. She turns around and says, "Slap my butt." What are you going to do? You look like a dork no matter what you do, right? So he did the only thing he could do, which I thought was quite sensible. He taps her on her back, on their back, on her lower back. It was high up above the butt.
Well, it's also weird when it's like
that was watching, a tough thing for him.
You're watching the Olympics. He's hanging out with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah,
watching the opening ceremony. Apparently, you know, we find out later on when Costas asks him, talking about the whole Georgia incident. You know, the next day he's basically hanging out with the athletes. Which on one hand has to be incredible for your president to come out to support you, and on the other hand, you've got to be sitting there like, can't you do something about the economy, sir?
I just wonder, it's kind of odd that he wasn't in a luxury box. It looks like he was just sitting in the stands with everybody else. And he looked kind of bored. I caught him looking at his watch a couple of times. That was odd.
It was quite interesting. The coverage in the UK was much more cynical about the Chinese. There was segment after segment where, you know, there were a couple of British reporters that had been arrested for reporting on various different things. There's a lot of coverage of the Chinese police arresting these reporters. A lot of coverage.
Thank goodness for Twitter. There was a really interesting Twitter exchange. It was in Chinese, but you could probably I saw a translation of it. A Chinese blogger who went to Beijing to cover the Olympics, not necessarily a political blogger, twittering as he gets arrested by the secret police. Well, it's funny because this guy's 27 and childless, but it was the one child police who came and got him. He says, "What do you mean? I don't have any children." They say, "You have more than one child." "I don't have any children." And get him to go back to the country where he belongs and get out of town. But because of Twitter, he has BlackBerry and he was Twitter burying the whole thing. You know, I think that's quite
technology,
interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. That's the future of the sort of change of the internet.
I met somebody at New Media Expo that's doing a really interesting site, allvoices.com. Just went online. And they're using a kind of Google News style aggregation to get citizen journalists text messages, tweets, MMSs, photos, blogs, and then they're going to use software to pinpoint it on the map. And so if there's something going on, let's say Russia invading Georgia, they'll be able to get on the ground from citizens these posts. I think it's really interesting. Allvoices.com. And even though it's brand new, there's some real coverage here, even of in China.
So you were at NME this week, Leo.
So it's like a Silverlight application.
I don't know. Is it? That would be too bad if it is. Maybe it's Flash. I mean, Silverlight worked pretty well for Microsoft's, for NBC, didn't it?
Yeah.
I thought they did a pretty good job. So, yes, so you can hover your mouse over the map and see where there are events going on. And I like this idea. ultimately, of citizen journalism, right?
You know, I saw the same exact app on the Silverlight developer site. I was looking at some of the things people were working on. And the exact same thing some guys developed. It's part of a... Oh, wait a minute. No, I take it back. Sorry. I saw this exact same app exactly on Pipes.
Oh, maybe. Yahoo Pipes?
Yeah.
Huh.
And there's a guy who developed this thing with these with the same little markers at the, where some news is taking place.
Well, that, maybe they're using this technology because I talked to the founder and she said it's all computer generated. So, and I imagine
yeah, no, this guy had this really cool pipe. It was like it went from the news feeds from Reuters and some other places. Then it went to the then it found out where they were coming, where the sites were that were producing the news. And then it went to a map and then it went to a this and a that. And then it ended up with this exactly. It looks exactly the same.
Here's Georgia's president eating his tie on TV.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah, I have to say, I love the concept of a sort of open media site from all around the world. But the proof of pudding is in the eating. And the stuff that's on the front page of the site is just like...
Well, it's brand new. It launched 2 weeks ago. I think that the key is in fact, one of the reasons I want to plug it is to get people to start using it and sign up for it, especially if you're in a war-torn region of the world.
Because yeah, if you're in the war-torn region of the world, the first thing you're thinking
about
is
sign up for that
Twitter.
MMS. Yeah, Twitter now. Twitter now. We want to get the reports direct.
I don't know. This doesn't look... I'm not impressed.
Not impressing you.
So was there anything exciting that came out of NMA that you enjoyed in particular? Or
well, our coverage is pretty exciting. We spent... You remember, Patrick, $1 million going down to CES at Comdex before that to cover it for Tech TV. And basically did the same thing for... $50 in a box of Cheetos. I mean, it was...
Yeah, but I mean, but covering like NME, you know, that's like covering the Shawangunk chicken racing tournament versus covering the Super Bowl.
Well,
you know,
what did we do so different? I don't know what we did so different, really. I mean, we sat up there on a stage and people came to us.
There's 12,000 products, 2,500...
We didn't cover 12,000 products. We sat on a stage and people came to us.
Absolutely. You showed up and people came to you. I spent 9 hours a day meeting with vendors and getting the products in for you.
Not that you're bitter.
No, I'm not bitter at all. I'm just reminding Leo that there were a couple
there
of
were producers. There were producers. Well, I'd be curious. You know, I wanted to do this as a test, proof of concept.
Leo, we covered CES twice, once doing live shows and once doing tape stuff with DLTV. And we did tape shows. You know what I mean? We did live stuff using a TriCaster with DLTV. And the biggest problem, actually, in most cases, is getting bandwidth during CES to upload to your
yes.
servers.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, we did it for, you know, a tiny fraction of what Tech TV would have cost. But we also did a much more modest show. We did it, right. A couple hours a day for 4 days. You know, we did it with
I'm thinking this is pretty exciting. Yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. We'll try CES in January. I'm torn between CES and Macworld because Macworld's so close.
Figure out your bandwidth. The bandwidth issues at CES are dramatic.
Right. And this worked really well. We were in the LVCC, but we had a dedicated DSL line that nobody else was using, and that worked pretty well.
The thing is, though, usually in the LVCC, what they call a dedicated line is actually a split line, and
we had a DSL modem on it.
If you had a DSL modem, then that might have been. It's weird. I've run into stuff where they claim it's.
No, I understand. They sell it to you as if it's dedicated, but it's 15 other people are also buying that dedicated line.
Yeah, because they only have a single vendor in there doing all of the access.
I have to find out how they did it. StickAmp did it for us, and I have to find out how they did it because that's exactly the model for next time. But John, on your blog, you have the blue screen of death on the. opening ceremonies. Is this real or is that a reflection?
That was confirmed by Gizmodo and a bunch of independent people who, I guess the stands were filled with enough people that saw that thing that they all took pictures of it. So there's about 10 or 15 pictures of it from different people all over the place. So initially when it came in, we thought it was like an obvious Photoshop job. And then No, it's the real deal. It was a blue screen of death at the Olympics during the thing, and the big giant thing on the side of the building.
Well, because that's the screen that they had in the rim around the bird's nest where they were projecting the water and so forth. Obviously, they were using PowerPoint projectors and a PC to project it, and whoops, a little BSOD there.
My understanding is Gates was in the audience when that happened.
You're kidding. No, really?
That's what I heard. I don't know.
But that sounds a little too perfect, doesn't it?
It does.
God. Can you imagine being Bill
that
Gates and looking
at somebody
up?
May have like crashed it on purpose?
It'd be so humiliating.
I've never
seen that at CES for like 4 years in a row.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, that blue screen of death is like, that looks like a Windows 98 blue screen to me. I don't know. I don't even see that much anymore.
It's not like they paid for the license anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Probably a bootleg copy.
If you were watching our broadcast, our Twitcast last week, actually, with the Twitch show, I had a blue screen of death right at the beginning of the recording on this Vista machine to my left. Died, yeah. And sat and it stayed blue the whole show because I was in the show. I couldn't turn it off. Fortunately, we had a backup recording, but they still happen. They still happen. It does look like it doesn't, you know, let me zoom in on it. It doesn't look like, I don't know if I can quite read it. It's not in Chinese, I don't think.
Yeah. Hey, John, did you see the report that GE made $1.7 billion off of all the work they did for the Olympics for China?
Oh, that's interesting. Because they're one of the main sponsors of the online stuff.
So what did they do? Did they set up a lot? I mean, because certainly there was a lot
from like networks to power supply infrastructure. Everything from like, yeah, pretty much everything.
Because a lot of what, certainly my interpretation of what I saw at the opening ceremonies was China saying, not only do we have a lot of people who can work in perfect synchrony, but we also have great technology. So if it was American technology.
Well, it'd be interesting to know how much they spent in total on all of the Olympics.
Oh, man. Well, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah, you know, I actually admire the job they did. I think overall, even though there was, you know, we have a couple of reports, you know, they have a protest area that if you go in, you want to protest, they arrest you. And they say, oh, yeah, now we're going to have a special protest area. You know, go there. Okay, I'm going to protest. You're under arrest.
Yeah, out of here.
I mean, that kind of thing. Yeah, but at the same
time. Isn't that what they've been doing with the couple of the conferences that have been going on, the economic conferences in the United States? Oh, wait, there's no area to collect you. They just arrest you in the streets now, right?
Yeah, that works. But anyway, I think overall it's been an outstanding product over, you know, and I want to call it a product because that's what it is.
It is a product, yeah.
And it's an outstanding one. And the fact that they can get all these people together, it's like a giant party with all the best people. And that American basketball team is just the funnest. It's just more fun than anything to watch. They're just terrific. They look like they're having fun. And, you know, it's just astonishing.
I have to say, this has been an enjoyable Olympics. Very commercial, though, if you watch it on TV. I mean, every 5 minutes they're breaking away.
Yeah, you got to stop it.
I think it's interesting because it's really the only major TV event that you can count on these days. As TV audiences get so fractured, it's very rare that a large chunk of the populace comes together for anything.
You know what? They're still getting like 10 or 15 million people showing up for the Dancing with Weasels or, you know, America's Next Great Weasel.
So your weasel can dance? I think that's it.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. Some of those shows, Will, here are gathering in, you know, okay,
American
maybe it's
weasel.
Only, you know, so if they have 30 million people watch the Olympics, that's one in every 10 Americans. And it's not unusual for a lot of those bizarre shows to get like, you know,
Do you think American Idol got better ratings in the Olympics?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
At times it has, yeah.
But, you know, also the Olympics are segmented. There's not just one channel.
True.
There's the NBC channel, which is mostly the volleyball, which, you know, you get a little tired of. And no offense to the girls with the nice whatever.
No, but Misty May's like 48. I mean, come on. Let's.
They're getting pretty old. But anyway.
Whoa,
but if you,
stop.
There's
stop
two
right
Olympics.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
Most 20-year-olds I know are neck shape.
All right. I'm just joking.
She's an athlete. What do you expect? But anyway, the point is there's a whole bunch, you know, USA Network has it, CNBC has it. There's two dedicated Olympic channels on the satellite,
right.
You know, Olympic A, Olympic B. And so, you know, you could go watch, you don't have to be. So I think the numbers, you know, even aggregated, probably maybe are pretty big.
My friend is went out of town, he's on vacation, and he realized he forgot to set the DVR to record the Olympics. So he called me, and I went into his house, and he knew I'd be the only person to be able to figure out his crazy Fakatka stereo. So I did. I figured it all out, plugged it all in. And I thought, well, what am I going to record? I mean, there's, as you say. So I just gave him, you know, the secret word pass, you know, whatever it is in the DVR. So I just typed in Olympics. I said, record everything with Olympics in the title.
Oh, God. The guy seems full of crap.
I just hope he has a big hard drive.
And nothing else on there he wanted to watch.
It'll be one day. He'll have one day's worth of stuff.
He'll have that if he's got HD recording, he's got less than a day.
Oh, man. I that was probably a mean thing to do. But I didn't know what he wanted, so I recorded it all.
So talking about terrible regimes that are mildly successful, how about the RIAA almost shutting down Pandora?
I think they will. So this is the copyright. It's really not the RIAA.
Yeah, it's a dreadful segue.
Yeah, the copyright folks are now pushing forward, and I guess it's going to go ahead. This new royalty structure that'll make online radio stations pay twice as much as real radio stations per play.
And Pandora says it can't afford it anymore, and it's on its last legs and may go away very soon.
Tim Westergren says if this goes through, we're not going to be able to survive. That's 75% of our revenue, and they're big. The little stations say it's more than we make. We're going to just shut down. So this is that thing that we fought so vigorously a year ago. Didn't win. It's back. But there are some happy occasions. There are some occasions to celebrate. There are two people now who've won lawsuits against the Recording Industry Association of America. And that is reason to celebrate just a little bit. You know, Jamie Thomas is still waiting to hear back. The judge said, though, about a week ago, she said he was tempted to call for a mistrial because he was... this is kind of an interesting admission. He said, well, the RIAA told me that the law said you didn't have to prove that there was actual downloads occurred. So that's the instruction I gave the jury. In retrospect, nah, I think probably not.
As the coder would say, wow, fantastic.
So that's one. A single mom. This is your typical RIAA BS story. So this woman is a single mom. She has, I think, an 8-year-old. This is another story. 8-year-old daughter. 4 years ago, the Recording Industry Association of America said that she and her 8-year-old were downloading gangsta rap to their home computer. She said, what are you talking about? She offered investigators the chance to look at her PC. They said, no, we're just going to prosecute unless you pay us. Her quote is, they said, you're going to have to pay us or we won't go away. She said, no, I'm fighting it. She was served with papers. The court case began. Fortunately, she found a lawyer that said, I'll cover you. If you don't win, you don't owe me anything. During the case, she submitted her PC to the music industry's own legal team for analysis. After the analysis was complete, the RIAA refused to release the report. The judge said, dudes, you got to release it. They did release it. It said, nah, there's no evidence of piracy. Of course, the case was thrown out. Then she said, oh, wait a minute. I got some legal fees. She countersued, and the court has awarded her. Get this. The RIAA said, we'll give you $30,000. She said, no. I said, well, we'll give you $60,000. She said, no. The court has awarded her $107,951.
Nice.
From the recording industry for legal fees. Yes.
That's the result.
That is what we like. Bad news for the RIAA.
But one company that won't be getting very much money here or is struggling for it is Twitter, cutting all its worldwide. You may not have realized this because
in
the UK. It's Twitter has basically killed all its SMS services outside of the US.
So you can use a short code 40404 in the US, but you can't use that plus 44.
There was never a short code that worked in the UK.
Right,
full number. But they've now. It used to be that you could get all your updates from Twitter via SMS, and they've just switched it off and said, sorry, it's costing us too much money and it's never coming back.
So, but did you just use the web?
Yeah, but the whole point of Twitter was that it would fit in the SMS limit, right? The 140 characters.
Yeah, SMS isn't important.
Never realized they'd have to be paying 16,000 MS,
can you imagine what it must cost them, actually?
That's cost them a lot of money. But what would be better, surely, would be to give people an option to pay to receive SMS. For example, if you're the sort of person that relies on SMS for your Twitter, wouldn't you pay, £3 or £4 a month to have your Twitter? And they can even make a little bit of profit on it.
The whole thing's a scam. You're already paying $20 for unlimited SMS.
Yeah, you guys pay to receive SMS over here, which is crazy. How do you... Why would you need to pay to receive SMS?
Because you're using their network, Will.
Yeah, but...
It's you guys in the
$700 a megabyte when you multiply the price out.
Yeah, you don't have to pay to receive SMS in the UK. That seems crazy to me.
We pay to receive cell calls too. You must pay to receive cell calls.
Well, only in terms of having a service plan.
No, we pay for every call. We pay minute. So when I make a cell phone call to you, not only do I pay to call you, you pay to receive the call in the US.
No.
Yeah.
Is that really true?
But you're not paying to receive the call. You're paying for the use of the network.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, well, have you ever taken a look at healthcare in the United States?
So, and this is why I think, you know, it's so interesting to compare, you know, like the iPhone price plans and things, because we have, because in the UK, you know, things like the iPhone, you've got basically unlimited send and receive SMS, unlimited data, and, you know, 500 to 1,000 minutes of call time to somebody else for a price that's barely any more than any standard cell phone plan in the UK, which is, I think, makes the iPhone a lot more attractive.
So Bono played his stereo a little too loud. Did you see this story?
Talk about old school piracy.
So four songs from U2's newest album, No Line on the Horizons, got out. And everybody was freaking out. They were leaked online. How did they get them? Turns out Bono was listening to the stereo in his villa in the south of France. Little too loud. Some fans recorded it. A passerby says, I recognize the voice, and I recorded it and released it onto the internet.
How loud is his music? How loud does he play his stereo?
Well, of course, the irony being that that U2's manager has been absolutely outspoken about how evil peer-to-peer networks are, how terrible it is that everybody's pirating U2's music that, you know, they should be paying for, and then Bono goes and sort of hands it to them on a plate.
I want to find the recordings, because I imagine that, I mean, how good could they be?
They can't be good.
But they're good enough for fans, right?
I think if I Googled...
Good enough to win the surprise.
Yeah, dude, that's a good point. It's enough to hear the song, right? See, the song's Sexy Boots. Let me see if I can find it. Look on my peer-to-peer network. U2, Sexy Boots. This is what Google's so good for. See, they should really shut down Google, because it's really a music piracy tool. Don't you think?
Let's shut down Google. That's the idea. Then what will we do?
Then what will we do? You two sexy boots. Oh, this was their strategy. All the results are like news articles about how Sexy Boots leaked. That's their strategy. They keep you from finding
it. Yeah, the whole thing's a marketing publicity stunt.
Damn. Maybe if I look on SeekPod.
Surely just YouTube. YouTube's always got it.
But there's no video. Maybe
yeah, but people just like put fan montages of Bono pictures.
You think it's a way to promote the album?
Yeah, we're being scammed. We shouldn't even be talking about it. It should be boycotted.
Never mind. Never mind. Forget we said anything, you stinker Bono, you. You fooled us. Netflix was out. They won't say why. You couldn't get them. Did anybody missing their movies? You missed your movies? They were late? Because Netflix shut down the distribution centers. 55 distribution centers. Boy, that's a lot of them. Mm. And they shut them down. They said they never said what was wrong. They just said... but they're back online. Did you get the movies yet? We got two listeners in studio, Dave Kelly and Jamie Linker. Dave, did you get your movies?
Yeah,
they came. They got them now. See?
We are nothing to see here.
Right on the edge. Right on the bleeding edge of the stories.
Move along.
There's nothing
to
see?
Talking about moving along, you know, I'm looking at this story. What is this about Microsoft money?
They're not going to sell it in shrink-wrapped anymore. This is the new trend, and I think this is interesting. You know, we got an accountant in here, and I had bought QuickBooks because I thought, oh, you're supposed to use QuickBooks. And she said, no. You don't buy QuickBooks anymore. You just use the online version of QuickBooks.
Cloud.
$30 a month. And apparently that's what Microsoft's going to do with money. They pulled
$30 a month?
Well, it won't be that much for money. QuickBooks is expensive anyway. So this is not much different than getting the deluxe version of QuickBooks. And it's always
so they're basically moving money from software to software as a service.
Yes.
This is Microsoft's big strategy. Get everyone paying monthly and then...
Monthly. Microsoft's want to do this for ages.
Well, it makes it sound cheaper.
It does. It'll probably be, you know, $10 a month.
Yeah.
$5 a month.
It's like rather than spending $100.
It's $120 for a $49 product. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't even get a box and you don't get a book. You don't get anything.
You haven't gotten a book in ages.
Why do you think they love it so much? Because it's, you know, minimal cost, maximum profit. It's you know.
Does anybody think about the customer anyway anymore? Servicing the customer, giving him his money or her, giving the customer
actually,
the customer's
John,
money.
John, that's crazy
worth.
Talk. That's
Bell's
crazy talk.
Back to servicing customers.
Money's worth maybe you know something you get value for the amount
you're
of.
You're sounding like an old guy. You want some physical product? Is that it?
No, I want my money's worth. If they, here's the deal. This is, reminds me of the bank tellers. All of a sudden, they put everybody on. Oh, let's make it. We'll automate the bank teller. So we have a version, you know, one of these machines, bank teller machine. And then the next thing you know, they're charging you extra money to use it. It's supposed to save them money to begin with. They don't. They get to fire somebody or two people. They keep the thing going all the time. It doesn't cost anything to maintain.
John, it's a free market. Go to another bank.
I do. I go to a good bank, the Mechanics Bank.
Do they have people behind the counters?
It's a small, locally owned bank. Basically, epic customer service. My car loans through them. I had a checking account with them. I gave up. Like, you know what? If somebody's giving you bad customer service, leave them.
Are there actually mechanics in there?
Mechanics Bank is an old bank from the – it's an old East Bay bank that goes back forever. It's a family-owned bank. And I remember every time, like, if I want to do some small business to sell some discs or something, I can walk down to the bank, my local branch, and grab one of those, you know, credit card crunchers. And, you know, they just give all this stuff and the little – you don't have to go through a rigmarole to get, you know – I mean, it's just an amazing bank.
But that's, banks used to be like that, but after they've been like bought four times, and in order to pay for what it costs to buy every regional bank in the state of New Jersey, they end up charging you. You know, it's absolutely insane all of the fees that are out now for a lot of the, especially the really big banks.
And if I use one of those money machines, you know, the whatever you call them, tellers, the automated tellers.
You know, these things, these ATM things you get on the street.
There's an entire generation of young Americans growing up believing that music is free. It comes from the internet.
Money comes out of a slot.
I should be treated like crap by
the bank.
Leo, have you ever had a really good experience with a financial services provider?
No.
I have.
You have? Tell us about it. How about Visa? How about
Why
Visa?
Don't you tell us about Visa?
I'm gonna give you an example. Yes, I will. Visa. This show is brought to you by Visa, you know. That's we all like to, you know, bitch and moan, but let me tell you something. I've been getting emails by the dozens from people who say, you know, you talk about Visa and you're absolutely right. Guy sent me an email the other day, said my mom bought something really expensive. I can't remember what it was, something really expensive. And it turned out to be a ripoff, and we were really worried. And Visa said, no problem. We'll take care of it. We'll take it from here. Here's your money back. We'll pursue this matter. And they did, and it's a beautiful thing. When you go online to buy, you don't have to worry when you use your Visa card. All purchases you make are safe and secure with Visa. They prevent, they detect, they resolve online fraud, so you don't have to worry. All you got to think is zero liability. You are just not liable for unauthorized purchases. That's peace of mind. Safe, secure, Visa. So you see, I have had a good experience. Thank you, Will Harris. He's looking at me. He's looking at me. He's thinking, you're going to do the Visa spot now, aren't you? Thank you for that segue. Will, I owe you one.
So what about this... This Jobs confirms the iPhone app blacklist.
Yeah. So there's a idea
the old switcheroo.
This makes sense. The idea, no, they had to do this. So that what there is, somebody noticed that the iPhone would periodically check this web address. And the web address is an empty right now, but could have something on it later, and a list of blacklisted apps. The idea being if an app is a rogue app and they discover it, they could put it on this list, the iPhone would check and disable this app. They have to have a kill switch. In fact, that's what Jobs says. He says, you know, would be irresponsible not to. Is there a problem with that?
Well, how would it get on the App Store in the first place if it was rogue?
How did that, you know, I Am Rich application get on the
App
Store?
That's true.
Obviously.
That was you know what? The I Am Rich application was awesome. Anybody who's stupid enough to buy a $1,000 item on their credit card and they go, oh my God, I thought it was a joke. Give me my money back. You know what? That was stupid.
Can you do that voice again?
Oh, my God, John. They don't have any tellers. And I have to go to the ATM. I want my old bank back. Actually, you know what? I want Home Depot to get some freaking clerks on the checkout line.
Now we go.
Watching somebody. Yeah. Those are like the dumbest invention ever.
Oh, that's the self-checkout thing?
I have to say, I saw technology go the other way. I was in Fry's electronics store yesterday, and you know how in like banks and big checkout things, they have like the big numbers above the checkout and the little voice that goes, "Please go to cashier number 4 to tell you to go to the right thing." So obviously the system wasn't working. They literally had just this little Indian woman standing on a crate of boxes, going, "Cashier number 4, cashier number 3, go to 4."
Oh, you were in Fry's.
Yeah,
it's actually cheaper to do it with a person than it is to do that whole electronic system.
Without having that person in Fry's on a Saturday afternoon, you would never actually get in line.
You do have to have that.
Yeah. You laugh, but like if that woman goes on a bathroom break, the line stops moving for 10 minutes. It's the saddest thing, Will. There's nothing more pathetic than a bunch of geeks next to the rack of chocolate.
What's next?
You know, not wearing their contacts, so they can't see.
Was Google Mail down?
Yes.
How long was Google Mail down? And the apps were down?
It was intermittently out for business for Google apps.
How can Google
go
down for 90 minutes? I don't understand.
It's a cloud. It's the cloud.
I just don't understand.
I don't trust the cloud.
So there were lots of people complaining because obviously a lot of businesses run on Google Mail and Google Apps for your domain, etc. And if your business goes out for, you know, a few hours in the week, and it recurred a couple of times in the week as well.
I saw the bitching and moaning, but I just don't, I mean, I don't rely on Google Mail.
You don't think of Google ever going down, do you?
I don't understand how it could go down. It's Google.
Yeah.
Therein lies the rub. Can you imagine when Microsoft gets up ahead of steam with its cloud crap, how long that's going to be crashing left and right?
So between MobileMe and Google and Amazon,
if everybody's going to rely on this cloud stuff for the, you know, for their apps, and if they want to do their tax, can you imagine what the tax thing's going to be like? You have to do your taxes, and you're going to use one of these online apps, and it's going to be April 14th. This thing, and it goes down at 6 o'clock in the evening the night before the 15th, before you have to finalize. It's ridiculous. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Rafe Noodleman does a great list in his CNET column, Webware 2.0. 10 worst web glitches of 2008 so far. Amazon S3 goes down. Twitter goes down. Firefox says we're going to sell, you know, download a million apps, and then the day starts and it's not working. Amazon goes offline. Google Docs goes down.
Surely Twitter is all of those top 10 down.
MobileMe goes down. Cool.com. Google competitor down first day. Then he mentions the Scrabulous thing. Gmail going down. Netflix going down. You know, you got to wonder, how are we going to rely on this infrastructure for the backbone of our economy?
Not if you're sensible.
Well, what's weird about it to me is the fact that we've been in the, you know, we've been in the internet game now for, you know, forever, for the, at least minimally since the web evolved around, you know, the early 90s. So we're going 15 years into it so far. And we have not really gone completely, even though there was a belated attempt in the late 90s, to move everything to the cloud, as we like to call it now. And the fact of the matter is the system is so unreliable, and we have never really seen an entire generation of people all move to the cloud, because it's only a hit and miss thing now. I mean, I don't use anything on the cloud except, you know, I blog on the cloud. But, you know, that's about it. It can't handle it.
You just hear the Rolling Stones. Hey, hey, you get off of my cloud. Hey,
I'm sorry,
hey,
you.
Well, no, I agree. I think it's a problem. On the other hand, I love cloud computing. I mean, I just love the idea of money being online, of Gmail being online. I mean, I love cloud computing. So can we make it more reliable?
I have to say,
the other thing is, what about the performance? The performance sucks.
I don't know. I think that there are a few apps that are really suited to being...
Email is obvious.
So email is the obvious one, right? Having all your email in the cloud rather than local seems at this point to be a bit of a seems a good idea.
Yeah.
Because then you can get anywhere.
How about your word processing?
Nah.
What's the gain there?
I can't see myself sitting down at somebody else's machine to write documents.
If you're in a work group, okay, maybe, but it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Why do you want to do your taxes online? I mean, I want to keep that stuff to myself on my own machine.
Well, I think that makes sense. Who's making you do your taxes online?
Nobody, but it sounds as though that they're going to do this with the QuickBooks and the Microsoft.
Well, I guess the idea of doing it online is if it interfaces with the
government's internet filing service.
But you can do that locally if you have. That's how they do it now. You install the application on your computer, then it accesses the information it can online.
Oh, okay.
This is all about reducing costs. It's about reducing packaging. It's about not having to pay for SKUs in the big box stores.
You know, I mean, in terms of like moving your tax stuff online.
But as you move stuff online, then you also have to consider privacy. You know, we just saw the admission by Cable One that they were for 6 months monitoring their customers' internet movements to amass, they say, a refined database of web server habits that could be sold to advertisers at premium rates. These are those that NebuAds technology. A small cable company, Bresnan Communications, said they did a similar thing from April 1st to June 26th. They don't tell anybody.
I think all these companies are just trying to find new ways to make money, like everybody.
But
I mean, on the packaging thing, you know, that you could make an argument that we sort of, there's a big environmental drive right now to reduce packaging, reduce distribution, reduce air miles and everything. Isn't moving to the cloud sort of environmentally responsible? Or is that just too hippie?
It's way too hippie.
Because, you know, I just think that there's no, you never want to buy software on disk now, do you really? I mean, if you're looking to get a new piece of software, where's the first place you go? You go to the internet.
Program, I would. But anyway, you can take your bong and come up with some better excuse.
Okay. Fair enough.
Wow. John with the smackdown. Did you go to Cal Berkeley?
Yes, ironically.
So you were the guy not doing anything naked in the campus.
I was selling the bongs, yes.
Okay. Well, complete change of topic. Patrick, have you been following this thing about the DEF CON? The hacking talk being banned?
Yeah, that's actually not unusual. Once every year or two, somebody runs afoul. Somebody basically gets a chilling effect based on the subject of their conversation and or the subject of their talk, and they back out rather than risk. There's one of two reactions. They either resign and fire up the lawyers, or they back down from giving the talk, and a select group of people in the audience figures out enough to start chasing down whatever the anomaly is on their own.
You didn't go to DEF CON this year?
No.
You used to go all the time.
I've been to every DEF CON for almost 10 years now, I think.
Why
8
not
years,
this
9
year?
Years. Just scheduling, family, and some production problems. We've been building a projector with system, and every possible thing that could go this particular project is going wrong.
So this is not unusual, though. I mean, I could think of other DEF CONs where authorities have tried to stop people from giving their presentations.
It happens often enough to, you know, and it happens, you know, I'm pretty sure it's happened at Black Hat and at other security conferences, you know, especially. I mean, you know what I found out recently is like Diebold changed their name.
Did you see that? That was an amazing story about the virus software.
Yeah.
Oh,
What happened?
Oh,
they're XKCD.com, which is one of the best.
Great cartoon site, yeah.
Amazing comic.
If you've never been there, go there now. Read all their cartoons. They're wonderful. But they, Premier Election Solutions, formerly Diebold, has blamed Ohio voting machine errors on problems with the machine's McAfee antivirus software.
Oh, good. They're running McAfee?
I like the, you know,
How does a virus get on an election?
Well, this is the conversation in the comic, right? Which is, well, surely it's better to have virus software on there than not. And the obvious answer is, well, why on earth have you got an infrastructure where your election machine needs a virus software?
And if they're relying on McAfee, we're all in trouble.
And I think they have a great analogy, which is, it's like your high school teacher at a parent-teacher evening saying, whenever I teach, I always use condoms. We think, sure, it's better than not, but someone's doing their job very wrong.
Yeah. I mean, McAfee actually does a pretty good job on a lot of things, but what's fascinating about that is, what are they connected to? What kind of open network are they connected to that they would need antivirus software? What internal incidents causes that? Or is that just some bizarre belt and suspenders, approach to the security on these devices?
This needs looking into.
Well, yeah, but the Diebolds need looking into for years. I mean, Diebold has their ass handed to them so hard they basically changed the name of the company. They did that because they thought Premier Election Solutions would be a big draw for, you know, all of the electorates that are trying to replace their hanging Chad machines. No, they did it because their name got trashed because they did a bunch of things wrong and then made it enormously difficult to make it, you know, for outside sources to verify the veracity of their code. That's a sentence.
Verify the veracity.
That was something. And now I know where the bong went.
Hey, before we go any further, this is I love this subject, but we'll talk about it in a second. So I want to mention audible.com. Your free audiobook awaits you at audible.com/twit. We've got so many great selections. Audible has just really been a great sponsor for us. 50,000 books, radio shows, lectures, newspapers, magazines, everything you'd ever want in audio you can listen to at audible.com/twit. Did we ever gotten you an Audible? No, we got to get you one, Will Harris. That has something to do with you being in the UK, I think.
Yeah, I think they have slightly different systems.
Different rules. Patrick, have you been reading? I got some good news actually for you, Patrick. I know you're reading Anathem.
Yes.
I talked to them. I said, "You're going to release that in audio?" They said, "You bet." They're recording it right now.
That's funny. I'm actually. It's going to be a few weeks before I can get to that because I'm going through the John Adams.
Isn't that great?
Biography. It's incredible.
Oh, and it's, by the way, that is an excellent audible book. Just love that, and it just really re-inspired. You love American history. It really inspired me to kind of get back into American history. Let's make that our pick. It's David McCullough's John Adams. But any of these 50,000 books can be yours. Just go to audible.com/twit if you're not already a member. Fill out the form, sign up today, get a book, get a credit toward a free book. And if you decide not to stick around, it's yours to keep anyway. No cost to you. I think you will want to stick around. So many great books. They are a great sponsor for us. We love them. And I know you're going to love your audiobooks. If you listen to podcasts, why aren't you listening to audible.com? AUDIBLE.com. Oh, any other big stories in the news this week?
No, been learning about the Diebold election systems conversion to Premier Election Solutions.
Why did they change their name?
They changed the name of that division. It's a subsidiary.
But also because Diebold has such a bad rep, right?
No, Diebold actually has a really good rep. They probably made the ATM machines that John hates.
Right, they make everybody's. Yeah, they make all.
I mean, they're good. I mean, they do a lot of good stuff. They acquired Global Election Systems in 2001.
Oh, they're the problem.
Then there was the whole Georgia Secretary of State did a contract with Diebold, and then the chief executive of Diebold was doing a lot of fundraising for the Republican Party, and then you know, there's all sorts of stuff. But basically, like in March 2007, it was reported by Associated Press that Diebold was considering divesting itself of its voting machine subsidiary because it was, quote, widely seen as tarnishing the company's reputation, unquote. And actually, in August 2007, a Wikipedia scanner found that edits via the company's IP addresses occurred to Diebold's Wikipedia article, removing criticisms of the company's products, references to its CEO fundraising for President Bush, and other negative criticism from the Wikipedia page about the company in November 2005. Yeah. So it's interesting.
Well, I just I think that everybody agrees that there's no way an electronic election system can work without a paper trail. I know people are fighting that, but I think now election commissions in every state agree, and that's pretty much the standard, isn't it?
It's a no-brainer, isn't it? Just some kind of backup.
Just
any kind of backup.
Just wait to look and see if it, you know, if the machine lied.
I think that makes sense.
Next.
There is no next. Let's wrap it up. What do you say?
Well, the only thing I was going to say is that there's the big Intel conferences this week. So look out for the news.
You're coming. IDF is coming up. You're out here for IDF.
Yes, that's this week. So there's going to be quite a lot of Intel news.
We'll get you back on next week and talk. You will know some stuff he can't say.
Well, you can say some broad things, which is Intel's going to be talking about, you know, Nehalem, which is its new desktop processor. Which is going to be bigger, better, faster than Core 2 and Core 2 Quad.
I hear it's going to do something kind of interesting, that it's going to allow you to run in dual core if there's no reason to run in dual core. But it has a quad core. You want to confirm or deny that? Have you heard that?
What has it got to do?
So that way, the buying decision is a lot easier. You just say, well, I'll buy the Nehalem Quad. And I'll have more power because it'll overclock in the two in the dual core. It gets a little faster. I'll have more power for programs that you don't use all four cores. But when I need all four cores, I've got them. See, isn't that clever?
Chirp, chirp.
It's to simplify the buying decision. And I can verify that because we had a really agonize over that with the Ultimate Gaming Machine. Do we go quad or dual?
There's too many SKUs, even, you know, and there's going to be, because they're not going to eliminate a bunch of SKUs when they release the new processors. There's
like, what,
25 different SKUs for Intel processors right now?
There should just be one chip.
Here.
One server chip, one desktop chip, one laptop chip.
Well, they're going to be talking about Larrabee as well, which is their new graphics card.
Larrabee sounds like a sidekick in Get Smart.
Larrabee stuff is really bizarre. It'll be interesting to hear them get a little more in depth. It sounds like basically a bunch of like DSPs bundled together. You know what I mean? It's like a bunch of parallel processing pipelines. It almost seems like it's less interesting as a graphics processor than it is, it being exploited like a cell chip.
Well, Larrabee is all x86 cores. So they're all it's like taking 20 Pentiums and putting them on a graphics card.
Well, hopefully something faster than Pentium.
Yeah. Pentium compatible.
Yeah, but that's what's really interesting about it as an idea. I think it's less interesting as a graphics processor than it is in what sort of custom applications people might come up with it.
Well, I think in time it's going to get... I think that'll certainly be initially. In time, these things are going to get more and more closer to real processing rather than just graphics processing. Because if you've got x86 flavored tasks to run on your processor and your graphics card is idle, if your graphics card is x86, just farm it out.
Yeah.
But I think calling it a GPU is kind of a MacGuffin on Intel's part rather than what its primary intentions are. I think they're calling it a GPU so they don't gut any of their potential sales in some markets.
That makes sense.
Yeah, eventually it'll just be... Well, I think, you know, what you're seeing with AMD is where they're starting to integrate everything onto the same core. Eventually, if you've just got, you know, 10,000 x86 cores, you'll just assign them as you want them.
Assuming they actually scale the way they want them to.
Yeah.
It's always kind of interesting when you start bundling a whole bunch of disparate elements on a single die.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's good to just do all of us computing in the cloud.
I'm going to the clouds right now. Will Harris is at channelflip.com. That is a great place to go if you want to watch the next generation of television on the net, including Jell-O and Girls. What more could you ask for on a channel than Jell-O and Girls? You call it jelly in the UK.
Yeah, it's a bit surreal. It's English humor, but it's very Monty Python, but you might get a grip. Somebody said that we should combine the Jell-O and the Girls channels together.
No. That's another show at another time. John C. Dvorak is online at Dvorak.org/blog, but also catch him on No Agenda, Tech 5, Cranky Geeks, many other fine shows.
And The Real Dvorak at Twitter.
Yeah, follow him. Please. You can also follow Patrick. He is Patrick Norton on Twitter. And watch him on TechZilla at TechZilla.com and System, SYSTM, all of them at Revision 3.
Why, thank you.
And we'll see you all another time. I'm Leo Laporte, another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.
Now you went into some sort of a loop on me.
Loop, 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 loop. Like that?
No.
I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screen?